afternoon, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson. Senator Dunleavy. Senator Bishop. Is there anything to come before the committee before we start our business? Seeing and hearing none, before us is the CS for House Bill number 374, Finance. It's backslash P, as in pickle. I'm not sure what the appropriate call sign is. Papa. Thank you. I have some nautical gentlemen around me. The C term is Papa, the version Papa. It's an act relating to the coverage under a state plan provided by the Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, establishing the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund, relating to a reinsurance program, relating to defining of residents who are high risk, relating to an application for a waiver for the state innovation for health care insurance, and providing for an effective date. I'd like to open the public hearing on House Bill number 374, Finance backslash P, Papa. The first person I have in the room wishing to testify is Kate Burkhart from the Alaska Mental Health Board. Welcome to Senate Finance, Ms. Burkhart. If you could identify yourself with the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony. 3 minutes, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kate Burkhart. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, the State Planning Councils for Behavioral Health. My comments today are on behalf of those boards and none other. I provided some written comment on behalf of the boards earlier today by email, and so I'll focus my spoken comments today on a constituency that I don't normally speak about in committees. Normally, I'm here talking about the most acutely disabled in our Medicaid system. The board support HB 374 because it has benefits to a different part of our constituency. Partially, folks who are working and who themselves or their family members experience a mild to moderate behavioral health condition that can be treated with regular access to a counselor or a mental health professional if they have resources to do that. And we have heard repeatedly around the state that working Alaskans often can't afford the insurance plans that are available to them in the marketplace. Either the subsidies are not enough, or the premiums are still too high, or the deductibles are so great that the insurance that they can't afford is not really meaningful. And so they go without services. And that can lead to their conditions becoming acute, which then leads to a greater level of disability and impairs their ability to work and take care of their families. And then they end up in the system that they were trying really hard to avoid. Stabilizing the insurance system and providing the opportunity for us to find ways to increase competition and provide more affordable options for folks benefits that part of my constituency. Another part of my constituency are the private mental health practitioners, often who practice as solo practitioners or in small practices, who can't afford to buy insurance for themselves and their families or to provide it for their employees. And what that means is that it makes it very difficult to recruit and retain qualified behavioral health professionals. I think most people want a job that provides health insurance benefits, and when those choices aren't available, they either choose not to come to Alaska or they choose to work for the larger providers that can provide insurance. Those private practitioners are a really important part of our healthcare sector. They serve those folks with mild to moderate conditions that work and take care of their families and that we don't normally talk about because they're not in the Medicaid system and they're not the most acutely disabled. And so supporting those small businesses and solo practitioners is really important. And so for them to be able to have access to more choices and more affordable health insurance coverage is important. HB 374 is not a panacea. It is the first step to resolving a lot of problems in the insurance sector. And we really appreciate the careful consideration of the bill, and I especially appreciated the comments this morning about the commitment to continuing to participate in the problem solving. So thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you, Ms. Burkhart. Thank you for your work for the state of Alaska and the people of Alaska. The next person off net is David Morgan. Mr. Morgan, are you there?
Absolutely. Good afternoon.
for testifying on the House bill earlier this week. I'm on a better system. I can actually hear you at that end instead of just speaking into a microphone. My name's Dave Morgan. I'm representing myself. I've been in Alaska working in the health industry for 32 years. I'm by education a health economist. I worked 15 years for South Central Foundation and 5 years for Providence Hospital. I've been a member of the State Health Commission for 6 years and chair of the Municipal Health Commission for 7 years, and I'm a fellow of Healthcare Financial Managers and the National Health Economists Association. Here, to move right along, is basically virtually every private insurance that's in this type of pool in the United States has had increases averaging above 25%. Alaska, Alabama, Hawaii, Tennessee, North Carolina, Minnesota have been over 40%. This was an actuarial flaw that everybody was warned about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, before some of the very groups that are asking for your help on this, advocated for this system and advocated for this program. I find it ironic, actually. In fact, virtually all the co-ops, because of not having correct actuarial studies and cost studies, are out of business, all but two out of the 20 in the United States. And Georgia just had its major insurer request a 65% increase for this coming year as handles individual policies. So House Bill 374 and Senate Bill 206. Basically, what we're talking about is creating a pool that's very much like the CAMI pool, except instead of pre-existing conditions and those that don't qualify for Medicaid, it's basically for a program for chronic and acute medical conditions that are high cost. No one's defined that, and when you look at other states that have been touted as examples, these cost pools have developed into black holes of cost that the states had to pick up either through major health care taxes or direct funding out of their treasury. And I'm talking about tens to hundreds of millions of dollars in very large states. So what can we do to make sure that we control the risk and control the cost? Well, you had a program 5 years ago that handled a lot of this called the CAMI program, the Chronic Acute Medical Assistance Program. And ironically, this was one of their things they touted that we would need because this program, ACA health insurance exchanges, would actually lower the cost of health care by $2,500 for every individual in the United States. They missed that, too. So if you go through the old chronic and acute medical assistance program and take out the income issues, it basically defines true chronic from terminal illness down to chronic hypertension, mental illness. You can just pull it up and look at it. I'm going to have this in a – I have 6 pages of written testimony. Then you look at how it's covered, and then a process of making sure that they're just not dumping guys in here, that if they have some type of health insurance or they qualify for VA or may qualify for Medicare or qualify for another program or even tribal coverage, that everybody pays their part of the health care costs. And the pool, like any true insurance pool, picks up what's not covered. Now, the last part is the most important part to me, that basically it defines what they cover. Now that we've defined exactly what is chronic, and then goes through a process of how it buys. And the whole program used to rely on centers of Medicare quality. There are many of them that give extremely high quality, but compared to Alaskan costs are about half as expensive. The Alaska Health Insurance Underwriters has had a program for 8 years to go to high quality and lesser cost, and has found that there are many programs that with a simple airline ticket you can save 50 to 60% of the cost of the health care, including hotel. So to me, before you just release the hounds, because this administration has had a I worry that the institutions involved will not necessarily look at it from cost drivers of getting the best deal with the highest quality, like the NUCA program at South Central, which has actually lowered the cost per member per month for chronics. Because remember, 8% of the population in any program consume 80% of the cost. Now, $55 million may not seem much now, but the people involved in this over the last 3 years and 5 years, I noticed, have always missed costs. The Medicaid expansion program was rejected in the fall at the saving $32 million. The Mangus report, which Senator Malachowski held up and talked about how great he was. I did notice that he didn't mention that now the projected four-year cost is $56 million, an $88 million increase in total cost. And they've only been into the program 6 months. So my suggestion is to follow up and add amendments to the bill to make sure that whatever waiver you ask for has these type of programs in it, that those programs are implemented, and that you look at the chronic and acute medical assistance CAMI program to look, because that never went above $30 to $40 million, or it didn't go above $13 to $14 million up there. Now, what's coming up? Oh, there's a whole bunch of more fun. In 2018, they're going to have a 17% Cadillac tax on virtually every 70% of the health care policies in this state. Now, when that hits, and with the current economic conditions, you may have a lot more people that will be in the individual market versus the employed market, especially employers that have less than 30 to 40 employees. And then I'm sitting here looking at the Myers and Stoffel proposal from Health and Human Services, a recommendation for internal health care tax in our hospitals and nursing homes and possibly other providers. I sat in on some of those workshops. It was pretty interesting financial projections there. So basically, projections are always low in cost and overestimating in savings so far, and you have a big problem here, and I don't think anybody anticipated nor were they told that suddenly you're going to have to cough up $55 million, and that was the number used in the House public hearing, to move over out of your general fund to fund this program. Now, a lot of that may depend on what they're all defined as chronic and how they're going to buy those services. But the bill's a page and a half, and it doesn't go into a lot of detail. So I'm sure that's over 3 minutes, but I will provide my study and my information of 8 pages to the committee ASAP now that my public testimony is completed. Any questions?
Mr. Morgan, that's
my job. Thank you so much for testifying today. Are there questions, Senator Dunleavy?
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Morgan, if there are no amendments, such as you alluded to, from your perspective, would you still support the bill?
Well, the problem, here's why I wouldn't support the bill, because right now it's a blank check. Interest groups can really influence this. They can develop and mold how this turns out. I think general parameters on how this is set up, how it's managed, and the chronic conditions that go into it, it's not like you need to do a study. We've done tons of them. The commission has 6 years of this. Department of Health and Human Services through Myers and Stoffel has this. So you can put some general managed care techniques into your bill through amendments to keep them clearly focused on, if we're going to do this, then we can't do business as usual, which is go to a program, you get billed, and you pay it. These are chronic, however you define it, they use a lot of services, and this will be basically shifting tens of millions of dollars, and sometimes the path of least resort is the one taken, and we all know that. So that's my opinion. I'd like a little more beef to the bill, and I'd like for it to have some cost containment and work on cost drivers.
Senator Dunleavy,
follow up.
From your perspective, if we don't pass the bill, what do you foresee happening to our health care in Alaska?
Well, in the long term, with the way the exchanges are developed and set up, you have a death spiral. I think you could turn this into an advantage by directing Health and Human Services to follow the processes that were in your CAMI program in order to mitigate, actually improve quality by managing that care, but also controlling the cost and making those dollars go farther. When you don't have management, you tend to not have people on the ball and the providers trying to control costs. So I don't see it as an either or. I see it as just take the chronic acute medical assistance program that was there, taking the sections that I've mentioned and pointed out, they're talking about a page, four amendments, and say, this is where we want to go. Let's look at the waiver that way. Remember, a waiver, no more federal money. You might get some demonstration money to do a test or do a program, but ultimately, fundamentally, the buck stops here in the states. And the courts have just ruled that the subsidy payments have to be passed by Congress through those corridors of costs, and we don't know what's going to happen in the next Congress, do we? So I would recommend that you take those, bullet them, put them in there, and say, this is where we'd like for this waiver to go, and we want to hear what you're going to, when you propose the waiver, if we're following that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan.
I just want to make sure that we captured, for the record, a couple things. I can't tell if you're saying CAMI or TAMI on a program that you're referring to that's currently or past exists. Some members here may know what that is. Can you give the initials for the acronym that you're using?
Sure. It's the Chronic and Acute Medical Assistance, and the initials are CAMA. Now, take out the income requirements because the program at that time had income restrictions because it was catching those that couldn't get insurance because of pre-existing conditions or didn't qualify for Medicaid. The Medicaid part's gone because we've expanded Medicaid. The total cost of the program on an average basis was between $12-15 million. To do a pool will be higher, but I worry and I'm concerned that once you get access to the general fund, things tend to grow real quick. And also it defines what chronic is, and that's the first key. The second, because you can define a lot of things as chronic, but the real chronic cost ones is that 8% number of patients. And then it has the process of helping to control costs, and this program did it very well. It controlled costs, it managed care, and it got a lot of quality for a few dollars by simply operating that way, and all the providers knew it.
Mr. Morgan,
then you referred to a program over at South Central Foundation, NUPA. Can you give us what that means and then the acronym?
If you go to their website, I can't pronounce it. Even though I work there a lot, the tribal names are a little tough for me being a farm boy from Kentucky. But I will tell you that program that Dr. Eady headed and I did some financial work on, by managing those chronic acute patients, that 3,000 to 5,000 lowered, even with the inflation figured in, lowered the cost per member per month, but they managed it. They had certified Medicare dietitians and working with diets for acute diabetes. It managed pharmacology. It managed ER room visits, which you have a test program running right now, but someone's already been doing it for 5 years very successfully. If you've already got a solution in Alaska that's working, I've always wondered, why do you have to go and do a pilot program? I suspect that it's about the grant dollars, not necessarily moving as quickly as possible on controlling the cost drivers. I've been watching this for 30 years.
Everybody's great does apply to life, including the patients.
Mr. Morgan, a final thought. You've been talking about managing health care, and the Division of Insurance has asserted that they don't manage health care, that they pay providers to do that, and that they are processing claims. So that's the first thought. So I already brought up the managed care at our first meeting this morning on this bill. So I think our thoughts are aligned with where you're going in your comments. But we have an insurance bill in front of us and an assertion from the administration that the last man standing on this exchange, thanks to the federal government and an unfunded mandate, that the last man standing in the insurance market could leave the market and leave the state with 23,000 uninsured folks, that the state will have to pick up those costs in another form. So with that information, do you have any quick comment, because we do have other people waiting to testify?
Sure. What we're talking about really is probably less than 900, probably around 200 to 300 individuals possibly. I don't have access to those stats. I've been out of there for a year or so. But you're asking for a waiver. You're asking to develop a pool with the program. The state's going to pay for it. I don't know why you can't set certain parameters to manage that care, not like an HMO, but to set what goes in, how it's processed, how you buy it, whether it's an insurance bill or not, because you might be processing payments. And if you're processing payments, you're in control of where those payments go and what you're buying. This is not an insurance program. It's a state-funded pool. And I think that's the difference. Now, if you can get a Mutual of Omaha or Kaiser Foundation to take up the program and they want to manage it and then you just hire them, that might be one solution. Or even NUCA at a program and institute up here in Anchorage to do it, where most of these patients are, basically numerically by zip code. We're talking about a Department of Insurance. Well, now you've got a bunch of chronic patients, and the issue is to make them better and to get them the service, the quality services that they need, and making sure we're getting, paying the best, the least bucks for that. Now, you can leave it open-ended and let it be like the blob and consume the whole budget eventually, just like Medicaid's projected to do right now, or you need to develop that waiver to have a program to do this. Now, I'm sure this is the hardest work anybody can get into. It's earnest. It's tough. Bring Dr. Eby in there. I bet you he'll explain how tough this is. But it can be done. And remember, you're not talking about a massive number of patients or individuals. You're not talking about
Mr. Morgan, the number's 495. Because of the work that you've done for the state, I'm trying to get specifics right this moment. Have you read version P?
No, you weren't on today, so I haven't had a chance to look at it.
Oh, okay.
Version P came out of the House a bit ago, but not very long ago. And in version P, it does ask the department basically to go and check and see if there's any other services. So in that part of your testimony, we believe that the new bill addresses that. Someone over in the House if you testified there, try to add that. What I hear you saying, and that's what I'm trying to clarify, is under the bill where the administration is asked to apply for the waiver for state innovation, that we should include that managed health care basically in that portion of the bill to outline what the administration actually goes after. Is that correct?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay, that's Senator Dunleavy. Mr. Morgan, I hope that you'll email my office with your notes and your ideas as quickly as possible. We are taking amendments at noon tomorrow.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope to see all of you at our Commonwealth North meeting on the 15th. I'm going to be there to talk to Premiera and Malta and Andrew Beck, and we're having a conference at noon on the 15th. It'll be very interesting.
Mr. Morgan, I would be delighted, and so would my grandson, for his grandma to be back in our hometown, but that's yet to be determined by the special session. Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. The next person online waiting to testify is Nancy Merriman from Alaska Primary Care Association. Ms. Merriman, are you there?
Good afternoon, Chair McKinnon and Senate Finance Committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in favor of HB 374. For the record, my name is Nancy Merriman, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Primary Care Association. APCA supports community health centers throughout Alaska and serves as one of Alaska's two navigator organizations with the responsibility to perform outreach and enrollment activities for Alaska's federally facilitated marketplace. We and our member health centers have educated and enrolled thousands of Alaskans in individual insurance plans since the inception of the healthcare marketplace. Since last year, our staff and partners across the state have reported many more patients at all eligible incomes choosing to forego insurance due to price. Unaffordable insurance results in an individual market which gets filled with the sicker people needing to have insurance. It leads to increased utilization of emergency services, poorer health outcomes, and personal financial instability. As an interim solution, we support this legislation because it would use the existing ACHIA mechanism to reinsure the most expensive claims by individual policyholders, offer the opportunity to lessen the rate of annual policy inflation, and stabilize the individual health insurance marketplace. We also support the section of the bill that authorizes the state to begin the process for applying for a 1332 waiver. We believe that the resulting focus on challenges faced by our small insurance market will yield a plan to make Alaska's health system more sustainable for the future. For both individual policyholders and the larger group marketplace, resolution of this matter is vital. The individual insurance market needs reinsurance to stabilize costs as well as to instill confidence in potential new insurers that Alaska is addressing the challenges of its small and expensive marketplace. We also believe that the cost of not passing this bill could be the collapse of the individual insurance market and the shifting of individual costs of over $120 million to plan holders in the bigger, small, and large group markets. As was mentioned during this morning's hearing, we are prepared to work with other major health organizations to address many factors that contribute to Alaska's high cost of care and are committed to participating in the upcoming 1332 waiver process discussions and other working groups on this important matter. Thank you for your attention to the Alaska health insurance market during this special session.
Thank you, Ms. Merriman. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, back in the room, Sheila Tallman. Sheila, if you'd approach the microphone, identify yourself for the record and any affiliation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sheila Tallman with Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, and I'm here today testifying in support of House Bill 374. As you've heard already, the individual health insurance market is in crisis, and I'd like to start by briefly describing what got us here the impacts to the insurance industry, and more importantly, the impacts to Alaska residents who are trying to obtain individual coverage. With health reform in 2014, the major change to the insurance market was guaranteed issue, which meant that all individuals would be guaranteed access to coverage without pre-existing condition exclusions. And this did provide access to several thousands of Alaska residents. The market before 2014 and before the ACA was that individual insurers could utilize medical underwriting. And this meant that individuals could be declined coverage in the individual private market. The high-risk pool was established as a way for those individuals to get the comprehensive care that they needed based on their high-cost condition. And this also helped create a shield to help individuals who were getting coverage in the individual market to find more affordable options, while those with the highest chronic conditions were in the high-risk pool. Before 2014 and the ACA, the insurance market, commercial insurance market, has also largely been regulated at the state level. With the ACA, we then had an overlap of new federal requirements coming on top of what had existed primarily regulated at the state level, which has created a number of consequences. So with guaranteed issue, we've experienced a significant influx of new enrollees with very high medical costs, many of which left the high-risk pool, which has shrunk by half, and the federal pre-existing condition pool, and Premera lost approximately $13 million in the individual market. In 2015 and 16, Premera had average rate increases just around 40% for the individual plans, but claims continued to exceed premiums. To break even in 2015, to give you an idea, Premera would have needed a 70% rate increase. And at these rates, only those individuals who need health services, who have these chronic conditions, will continue to pay these rates. Others will leave the pool, ever shrinking the pool, creating, as what has already been mentioned, the death spiral. Premier is taking in on average $713 in premium per member per month, but paying claims at $919 on average per member per month, which is demonstrating the very high claims costs in this pool. And in a very small-sized market like Alaska, there's simply not enough healthy individuals purchasing coverage to offset the costs of these very high-cost enrollees. We've heard about a number of the rate increases that are being experienced in other states, but it's important to know the benchmark premium price for coverage in Alaska. In Alaska, it is the highest in the country at over $700 per month. The next highest state is at $468 per month. So while other states are experiencing similar rate increases, the rate increase in Alaska is sitting on top of a $700 plan to begin with, which is demonstrating how high that cost is. We're very concerned that the premiums will continue to skyrocket due to the small size of the pool, and with fewer people to spread risks across, the individuals with these high-cost claims are destabilizing the individual pool. One solution is an approach that other insurers have taken already, which is to exit the individual market. Another approach is the reinsurance program, which would be administered by the state's high-risk pool. This reinsurance program would cover or reinsure the claims for the highest cost medical conditions. These are the long-term chronic conditions such as heart failure, kidney disease, hemophilia, and all of these would be specified by the Division of Insurance in a rule, and via the rulemaking, it would also establish all the parameters for this program, such as eligibility and how insurers would be participating in the program. A reinsurance program would help mitigate the premium increases, but also stabilize the market, which can potentially attract new competitors. We are getting ready to file the rates for 2017, and if this bill were to pass, the impact of this program would be incorporated into that rate filing for 2017. We also support the state innovation waiver. We support flexibility at the state level to help Alaskans maintain the coverage they've had, and also to tailor the reforms to meet the unique needs of this Alaska market. A waiver would allow the state to explore longer-term ideas to address the high cost of healthcare in the state. What Alaska needs is immediate relief from these year-over-year premium increases, and House Bill 374 will help Alaskans. And on behalf of the 23,000 individual policyholders, we ask for your support. We know that there are no easy answers to this problem, but Premera is committed to working together to help address the rising healthcare costs in the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from committee members? Thank you. 5 been remiss. I do want to let the public know that Senator Giesel and Senator Costello have been in the audience and following this issue the entire day. Welcome to Senate Finance. The next person waiting to testify off net is Jennifer Mayhoff. Jennifer, are you there?
I'm here. Good afternoon, Chairman McKinnon and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jennifer Mayhoff, and I'm a senior vice president with Marsha McLennan Agency in Anchorage, also a lifetime Alaskan. Today, though, I'm testifying in my role as co-chair of the Legislative Committee of the Alaska Association of Health Underwriters, or AHU. AHU represents over 100 licensed health insurance brokers, agents, consultants, and benefits specialists in Alaska. Our members consult with individuals, as well as small and large Alaskan employers, on how to purchase, administer, and utilize their individual or group health insurance coverage. Our membership consults with a business, a local government, or a school district in every one of your state Senate districts, and we are seeing firsthand what your constituents are experiencing as they attempt to purchase insurance to help pay for their medical expenses. Or if it's even affordable. What we're seeing is causing us great concern. We've moved from health insurance being expensive to it being potentially not even available for a large group of Alaskans. House Bill 374, as passed by the House, as you're aware, amends AS 21.55, which is a CHIA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, which we haven't heard much about lately because of the Affordable Care Act, which was supposed to help deal with the high-risk population. So that's where much of our focus has been. Unfortunately, in Alaska, the Affordable Care Act just hasn't worked. With HB 374, we can put a CHIA back to work, and we should, because doing nothing puts many more people at risk. We're concerned. We understand and appreciate the position you're in with revenue dropped and cutting budgets, and this is a considerable appropriation. But as tough as the situation appears now, we believe it could be much worse. Madam Chair, our concern is if we don't stabilize the individual market, we're going to start seeing erosion of the group market, which would be a more widespread and much more complicated problem to solve. In conclusion, AHU supports HB 374, and while this is an important and timely step, the health insurance market needs more attention. We've discussed this with the director, and she agrees, and we look forward to working further with her and the legislature to not just stop the bleeding now, but to put this patient back on its feet and be healthy again. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Jennifer, I have one. We don't have the money. We don't have the money. That's the bottom line. So where is a plan from the group that you work with that has more than the state of Alaska participating?
Well, we've looked at this, I guess, a couple of different ways, and I think initially what was proposed had some additional taxation per member per month, which was one solution to gather some more dollars. But certainly part of what our organization is looking very closely at are ways to cut costs for the medical care. That's a big concern of ours that we believe, and it's been discussed, has not been addressed at all through the Affordable Care Act, and there's been very little done to address the expenses. The 80th percentile would be one of those, transparency, and those are a couple of things that we're working with the director on for after session has ended.
Thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate the response, and I hope you understand the position down here and having to withdraw everything that we're spending or close to everything we're spending this year, at least as proposed today, from a savings account, which is unacceptable.
I understand.
Anything else
from committee members? The next person waiting to testify is Jennifer Jolip. Jennifer, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to Senate Finance.
Hi, Hi, thank you so much for hearing my testimony. My name is Jennifer Jolliffe, and I own a small acupuncture practice in Anchorage, and I purchase my health care on the insurance marketplace and do not qualify for a tax subsidy, and I am speaking to you today in support of House Bill 374. I also have sent everyone a letter back in late April, I think all of your committee members, that might have detailed in lots of charts and graphs premium prices that some of us are facing. And as you know, at the current premium rates, insurance for, at least for me and many other people, it's just on the brink of being something that I can manage financially. And with another anticipated 35% to 40% rate increase in healthcare insurance, that won't be an option for me. A quick calculation based on last year's rates and adjusting them up, I would be paying 35% of my take-home pay just in premium and deductible. I still have a mortgage. I still have a business to run. I still have property taxes and federal taxes. I couldn't purchase healthcare next year. And I really love having health insurance. I'm so grateful to have had it. And it scares me, and you maybe can hear that in my voice, to contemplate going without. I'm really, really healthy. I take no prescription drugs. I don't have any, you know, I don't have any health problems at all. But in my acupuncture practice, time after time, I see people that come to me for treatment with the same story, and that everything was fine until they fell on the ice and dislocated their shoulder or tripped on a threshold and hurt their back. Or, you know, I know of people who thought they had an ulcer that was acting up and they had stage 4 cancer. And so there's a moment sometimes in everyone's life when everything changes, and the last thing I hope that's on our minds is, how will I pay for this? And will I lose my business? Will I go bankrupt? You know, what's going to happen to my family? I don't want that for myself, and I don't want that for any other Alaskan. And so I'm therefore testifying in support of House Bill 374, and I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance, Jennifer. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone else off-net or online wishing to testify on the CS for House Bill number 374, Finance/P as in Papa? Is there anyone else here in Juneau wishing to testify on House Bill 374? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Would like to acknowledge that Commissioner Laddick is in the audience and has been here for the entire hearing also. If I could invite Director Winghire, as well as Deputy Commissioner Paradis, to the microphone to go over the fiscal note. Is that possible? Senator Machicki, did you want to just walk through briefly the fiscal note? Did you have that in your packet? And then we'll ask questions. Brief at ease. we're back on the record. Senator Machicki, if you could walk us through the fiscal note.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, the appropriation of insurance operations. The allocation is the same. The allocation code number is 354. Madam Chair, this is a one-time definite hit of $55 million in under grants and benefits, and the fund source is the 1248 fund. It's indeterminate, and that was in 17. It's indeterminate from 18 on through 22. The analysis in the back just talks about that this allows legislative appropriation of insurance premium tax receipts collected by the Division of Insurance to fund the reinsurance program created in this bill. And it talks about the fund being created as well as the new designated fund codes. Without too much more detail on the back page, Madam Chair, I think that just generally covers it in a nutshell.
Thank you. And if I might, while there's no net change to revenue generated from the premium taxes, those are the taxes that will be diverted from the general fund into the insurance fund as proposed in this bill into ACHEA. Is that accurate?
It is.
Are there questions? Deputy Commissioner Perry, would you like to give us some comments about the fiscal note?
Madam Chairman, I would echo your comment that although there's no net change to revenue, it is effectively a diversion of general fund to this purpose. The insurance premium tax has been a source of significant revenue to the general fund heretofore.
Director Wingheimer.
For the record, my name is Lori Wingheimer. The bill itself asks that the legislature make an appropriation each year as it sees fit. What was put in by House Labor and Commerce was $55 million, and it carried through to House Finance and then passed the House floor and is being presented to you as a $55 million fiscal note. Our analysis, which is based on the actuarial analysis that you have somewhere in your packet, and we've put up a claim, one part of that in the PowerPoint presentation, shows that $55 million will have somewhere between a 15 and an 18% stabilization on the premium rates, meaning that we do not expect that rates will go down this year. But if they were to ask, Premier were to file for a 40% rate increase, that it will perhaps be a 25% rate increase because of this reinsurance program. The amount in further years will be determined by the legislature, if any, to be appropriated to this reinsurance program.
Are there questions for committee members? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Under fiscal note support legislation, if this number was included.
It was there, Senator
okay,
Hoffman.
Thank you.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Chair, and I just want to be clear on the record. Director Paraday, the Deputy Commissioner, the Work Comp Division still gets their annual assessment peeled off, goes still to the Department of Workman's Comp, correct?
Yes, sir. Madam Chairman, Senator Bishop, Fred Paraday, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman, for clarity, under the fiscal notes at the conference committee, this bill was attached. If this bill does not pass, it would not be included. So the numbers that were spoken to by the co-chairman of finance and the Senate did not reflect the $55 million because it was a fiscal note added dependent on the passage of the bill. So in the numbers that the Senate has released as far as total general fund spending, this is not included there yet, but it's prepared to be included based on the conference committee and the passage by both bodies. Director Wingheimer, do you have comments on that or anything else to add on my statements on the conference committee and your understanding of the action that's before them?
No, ma'am, that's exactly how I understand it. It is a pending fiscal note to the budget, and it has been passed as such.
Thank you. I am recalling, I was able to listen to 45 minutes of the conversation over in the House Finance Committee, and I recall an assertion from the administration regarding a $200 million problem should the Senate not pass the bill or should the House not pass this idea from the administration. So could you speak to that, tell this committee if the answer is no, we don't have the money to subsidize insurance premiums on an exchange that some members may have supported under the Affordable Care Act, some members may not have, but regardless, however you felt about federal takeover of health care and the expansion to cover a guaranteed coverage rate, if we don't have it, what happens?
When we spoke earlier today and we talked about a little bit about the Medical Indemnity Corporation and we talked a little bit about if we were left without an insurance company and if the state had to set up an insurance company as a standalone corporation, what the cost would be. And our quick analysis, and again, this was just a quick analysis of what the cost would be to the state, and this includes just startup cost of looking at an operating system, staff, and then the biggest driver would be the surplus, because any company that comes into the state to do business has to have a surplus equivalent, there's a ratio, a set ratio to the expected claims, so that they have the ability to pay the claims when presented. Knowing what we know of the claims in the individual market, knowing the ratio, knowing, taking a rough guess at the operating cost it would take to establish a corporation, staff and such, we estimated it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $200 million for that initial startup cost. That being said, the state would be required, as any other insurer would, to maintain that capital or that surplus at the required ratio. So that would be the one time 200, but they would, just as we ask MOTA and Premera at certain times, any insurer at sometimes to raise capital to deposit into surplus, we would have to maintain that capital or that surplus at the correct statutory limits at all times. But that initial startup, we estimated would be $200 million to start a health insurance company.
Questions from committee members? Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just maybe too broad, but you were sitting in the back when testifier David Morgan was talking about certain amendments. Do you have any just general comments on the concepts he was discussing?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, when I was sitting back there, I was able to take a look at a little bit of what he was talking about CAMI. And my concern on some of what he was talking about is, one, the income, because the Affordable Care Act doesn't limit income. It also doesn't limit diagnoses. That was the founding principle of the Affordable Care Act was guaranteed issue, is that everyone, no matter what their health condition was that they could get insurance. And the CAMI program, when you're talking the chronic condition, we can't look at just insuring people with chronic conditions. If we like it or not, it's all illnesses are under the Affordable Care Act, and all illnesses are being treated under the Affordable Care Act and have generated the claims that we're now looking at today. So I understand and respect what Dr. Morgan or Mr. Morgan was saying, but I don't know how we could take that and make it to the reinsurance program. I don't know how we could restrict it to the degree he was talking about and be basically a legal program by restricting it to certain conditions and it have guaranteed issue.
Senator Dunleavy.
I know I've asked this several different times. So if the bill is approved, money's appropriated, the hope is, it's a hope now, that others will come into the pool, will come back to Alaska, might reduce the cost and so forth. But some of those same conditions that caused this to happen to begin with seem to be destined to resurface. Is there anything you can do to help dispel that belief, at least on my part, that this is just the beginning, it's not the end, that the best we can hope for is maybe a continual estimated call on the general fund through an appropriation to continue to subsidize this at a certain level, or as you and Senator Olson were discussing early this morning, is there really a pretty good chance that people will come in, other entities will come in, insurance entities, and that will put an end to the need for us to continually do a draw on this? Or is there, is it just the Affordable Care Act and the situation that we're dealing with, is it just, it's inherent that it's just going to keep costing us more and more and more?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I mean, I can't predict the future. I wish I could, but I think that everyone recognizes that the Affordable Care Act is in its infancy. It's not perfect. There have got to be amendments made at the federal level. There has got to be some leeway given to the states to make it affordable, not just for Alaska, but all jurisdictions. And that being said, I think this is the beginning. I think this is a triage, a Band-Aid, to get us through the next year or so, so that we can address it at a state level and find the mechanisms that allow us to support ourselves in the individual market without having to make a draw on the general fund.
I just think we need to put, if this bill is going to pass through the chair, I think we do need to look at some amendments that will compel that behavior to happen. Because I don't think if the behavior, if there's no compelling language in here, it's not yourselves. But it's just human nature that it won't. It's easier just to ask for more money as opposed to restructure. That's what I think everyone is saying. And one last comment on the Affordable Care Act. I'm a little concerned that if it's in its infancy, what it's going to look like when it grows up. If it grows up.
Senator Dunleavy, we heard someone say that it was crawling. I don't think it's crawling, and I don't think it's affordable. I think it's an oxymoron to label this the Affordable Health Care Act. I know that Senator Bishop has shared at least one story with me. We've seen others in the newspaper. We all want folks to be able to have access to health care. We want them to be able to take care of issues that they are facing. But, you know, the federal government has made a stab at it. It may not be perfect. It's what we have dictated to the states at this particular time. And it's complex in how we should move forward. And because we're in special session and really haven't been collaborated with to come up with ideas on how to address this, we're being boxed in to $55 million. So I'm not sure how I can help the committee to move forward with additional information. What I heard Senator Dunleavy from Mr. Morgan was that we should look at language under the waiver program and insert language on the waiver program that required some kind of managed care effort on that waiver so that we could control costs in that manner under the waiver form. And so I'll look forward to reading hopefully that email before we come back at noon tomorrow. I'm just wondering, with the information that we've been provided, whether we can manage the timetable that we are trying to meet. Other comments from committee members? I understand where the $200 million came from. The other choice for the state of Alaska is if we turn down the administration's proposal on this, is that we put at risk the single carrier that is supporting the individual exchange market. I just wanted to make sure that was restated. Director Winghire, have I restated that accurately, that the concern of the administration or Deputy Commissioner Parity, the other concern that the administration is advancing along with this piece of legislation is that we have a single provider left in the system. Could you, people join us at different points in time, they're at different meetings, they may not understand some of the issues that have been presented to the legislature as far as why one might vote or not vote to support this particular proposal.
Madam Chairman, yes, ma'am. I believe you stated that accurately. The issue is that Alaska has seen the withdrawal of three of its four carriers with Moda's departure on May 2nd. Come January 1st, we'll have a single carrier left. Underlying that carrier, of course, is the 23,000 individuals in this market from whom you heard of one during the public testimony. So the issue is how best to triage through the coming 12 or 18 months. I think that the Medicaid reform effort that came from this committee and from the legislature with its health care authority, the innovation waiver that's being proposed in this bill, and then ongoing pressure on cost control are necessary tools to find a path forward.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I should have probably asked this earlier on your presentation, but of the waivers that I understand are going to be looked at and possibly approved in 2017, of the states that are included, I could understand how Colorado and some of the other western states, including Hawaii, are looking for the waivers, but why would Massachusetts be lumped into that type of demographics and the issue that we have? They seem to be on the total opposite of where we would be, which are small populations, wide areas. Well, Massachusetts was in there. What's the reason for that?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, while I can't say for sure what Massachusetts' thought process is, I think it's primarily to get out of the federal oversight and to have it more at a state regulatory, to be have the state control as opposed to federal.
Now, they seem to be there, but that mind thinking. No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Are there any additional questions from committee members?
No.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. We had another person arrive that would like to address the committee on HB 374. I'd like to reopen the public hearing on HB 374 and invite Gina Baznakis to the microphone. If you could identify yourself for the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with 3 minutes of public comment. Yes, up here. Welcome to Senate.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Gina Baznakis. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, a small business owner, and a past president of the Alaska Association of Health Underwriters. My firm's based in Anchorage, and my clients consist of individuals and families, private businesses in Anchorage, and quite a few school districts throughout the state. Over the past few years, I've seen my neighbors, my family members, and my clients struggle with insurance more than I have ever before in the past 29 years I've been in this business. Due to requirements of the Affordable Care Act, a lot of small businesses have elected to drop their group coverage for their employees and their family members, and they've steered them to the individual market. For themselves and their families, they're ending up paying so much more than they had anticipated. Most of these workers are low wage earners. And so they were hopeful that they would get into the exchange and get subsidies or be pulled into Medicare. And that generally is not happening. So what they're faced with is paying much more for a plan that covers much less, and they can't even seem to reach a deductible. The folks that have historically been doing the right thing by buying catastrophic coverage because they're healthy no longer have those plans available to them. So when they go out on into the individual marketplace and search for insurance, they end up getting a plan that costs them much more and doesn't fit their needs at all. What's available now with these plans have different mandates in them that have created a situation where you've got the high claimants and the low claimants in this one pool, and so we're seeing this 30 to 40% increase every year. The Alaskans who really need serious and ongoing medical attention but can only afford insurance that has very high deductible and can't afford insurance at all, they're faced with either getting penalized for not having insurance or paying an enormous amount for a policy that they really can't use because by the time that they've paid their premiums, they can't even reach their deductible. The old ACHEA, the ACHEA plan, we're all familiar with the acronym, right, I'm assuming? Okay. It was efficient, and it worked well for years. I was born in Fairbanks in 1958, and I've seen my fellow Alaskans support one another when it's been necessary. And I truly believe that allowing the functionality of an ACHEA-type program for the most ill of our state can create a much healthier insurance market, not only for those people, but other individuals and businesses. It's not going to fix everything. There's a lot of issues in our industry, but I really do think that this is definitely a good first step. And I thank you for your time today.
Questions from committee members? Gina, thank you for joining us. What I've said is that the state is in a pretty precarious situation, too, with anything that we put towards this particular program comes directly out of our savings account, and we just can't afford some of the things that we're currently paying for, and so how do we add another hole in the budget to support another industry that is being affected by actions that aren't of the state's making, that are more at a federal level, and that the unfunded mandate that is being carried by local, by individuals through this market, let alone by companies that are having to, they're collapsing under the market. We're in a tough spot. We don't know what to do, and it's $55 million more dollars in a budget that is $4 billion, or that's dropped now, I believe, to closer to $3.5 billion, but pretty bad situation.
And I understand that, but I'm watching this strife firsthand, and it's I hope that you do give this consideration, because I'm afraid that the outcome, if you don't make this move, is going to be worse.
Thank you for those comments. Senator Michigan?
It's not for the testifier, but just more in general, so I can wait if there are other questions.
Thank you. Gina, thank you for coming out today. Is there anyone else off-net, online, or in here in Juneau wishing to testify on House Bill 374? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Senator Michigan.
Back on that subject of what the state can afford and unfunded mandates, I'm likely going to support this bill just simply as a one-year stopgap, and then support working toward other solutions. But when you look at the time that we put into the Medicaid reform, heavily amending this bill with some sort of deliverable, I think, complicates the process fairly dramatically. It's just my opinion. If there's an amendment that can be executed relatively easily and still reach the two objectives of the bill, of the waiver and the stopgap funding, that's great. If it becomes much more complicated, I'm afraid the bill is at risk, and then you have other challenges. I'm just asking folks to keep that in mind. There's a lot of things that I would like to see added to the bill, but I think it's something that we likely work on over the interim and try to come up with a better solution. Complicated issue, no easy answers.
Comments from other committee members? As stated earlier, Senator Olson.
Chair, I, like Senator Michicki, are also very interested in this bill. Obviously, it affects people in my district as a former primary health care provider. It's one of those things that weighs heavily on your mind sometimes as you look at, from a remote location, looking at the cost, not just in dollars, but the cost and what you're putting the patient at risk to go through several hours in the air of having no medical help or no provisions to get to a facility. And so, as was pointed out by Senator Dunleavy, who's had family members who've been in dire straits as well, it's one of those things that I, at least at this point, I would like to go ahead and see some relief given to the insurance companies or to the Premier Act to make sure that we do have people that are not going naked out there for health care insurance, because it is a very scary situation as people become reminded of their mortality as human beings. And so I'm in favor, at least at this point, I'm in favor of the bill as it's, as it is. We can amend it, but I think it needs to be moved on.
Comments further from committee members? Amendments are due by 12 noon tomorrow. We have a committee meeting scheduled for 1:30. We may move the bill at that time, or we may hold it, depending on changes or amendments, until the following morning. So with that, we're adjourned.